Cool. Okay, so basically I want to talk about media lies, right? So I work as a documentary filmmaker and I've been around a few different productions, and I also watch TV, which is something that's a declining interest. So I want to talk about this, which is start with gun crime documentaries. If you've ever seen them, this is normally how they start. You get lots of CCTV type shots, gritty urban scenes, these kind of slightly dodgy shots there. And there'll normally be some rap music on the soundtrack to give you a little racist hint about what they really mean without making an accusation directly. So then you normally have this, which is what the graphics people think a council estate looks like, although it isn't. It's Trellick Tower, which is done by Erno Goldfinger. Okay. There we go. Oh, that's it. Nice and slate. We can relax. That picture there was, there it is there, that's Erno Goldfinger's grade 2 listed Trellick Tower. Now there's actually never been a murder in this building, and flats in the building cost about £500,000, and it's mainly architects that live there, so it was a spectacularly inappropriate thing to use, but nonetheless that was their main logo. So then you get to the nitty-gritty, which is this, which is interviewing kids with scarves over their faces. This is from Ross Kemp's show. That's Ross Kemp there on the left. This is a gang having a covert meeting with Ross in a secluded alleyway, which they've concealed their identity so that they don't attract the attention of police. But the giveaway on this shot is that the moonlight is coming from two directions, neither of which is the sky. So you can tell that this was actually less of what it appears to be. This was a meeting with a tripod mounted lights, had been a generator to power the lights, a broadcast van. They had to get written permission for the council because you can't put up tripods without council. So when you watch these things, it's not always what it appears. So normally what the kids will say and what they're saying to Ross Kemp here is that guns are really common where they live. Their brother's mate can get a machine gun in 5 minutes. I mean, how many times have you heard that on the news? But they never actually do it when the camera crew happen to be there, which is surprising. So this sense of danger that they want to convey to you, and it's there in the images and the way that that they score with music and everything, it really doesn't reflect the facts. If you look at murder rate in London, it's actually held pretty steady. There's been a big rise in population. It's actually fallen slightly in the last few years. So there were 148 homicides in 2008-2009. You're actually at much greater risk in London from air pollution. Well, it's not very clear, but there were over 4,000 deaths estimated to be from air pollution just in 2008-2009. That's the most recent year is available. But you won't ever see a program about how terrible that is, because that's that doesn't allow Ross Kemp to go in an alleyway to discuss it. So the thing is, though, that when it comes to gang crime and this kind of thing, people say, well, there still might be some kids. We had the riots and so on, and of course, there was a lot of looting and destruction in the riots. But, the thing is, you're actually a lot safer than these programs want to make out. Teenage gangsters tend to kill other teenage gangsters when they murder at all. So if you're not a teenage thug, you're actually really relatively safe. But even with that in mind, right, that's overstated, because during the whole period of the riots, which is the evidence that people always give you for why this is true, there was one shooting, which was somebody was shot in Croydon. But in an average week in London, there are actually three shootings. So all of this violence has actually kept all the most violence actually largely suppressed. There's a two-thirds reduction in murders. So because presumably, if you had a gun, you were probably staying at home or at your mum's house or something, right? So the problem is, you're getting a very misleading impression. It's a lot different from the way it appears to be. So the question is, well, why don't you get a fair appraisal of the facts when it comes to things like crime on TV? Well, it's very deliberate. It's by design, right? If you live outside of London and you watch this gives you a chance to feel good about yourself. It's depressing, but it makes you feel better, because you look at this, you live outside of London and you think, well, I'm missing that, but I'm also missing that. So you get to feel a little bit smug. And likewise, if you do live in London, well, you get to feel smug, because it makes you feel like you're sort of dangerous and exciting, And even though the suburb you live in probably never seen a gun crime. So the key thing is that when you watch these things, everybody in them is basically an actor, right? These teenage gangsters, they're doing exactly what any of you would have done if you were 14 and a journalist turned up at your school and just took you seriously. You'd say exactly the same thing that they always say, right? And the thing is, everybody's in on it, because the producers, in most cases, know that, that they're having their leg pulled. But you know, it's easier not to verify, right? You cannot be compelled to reveal your sources after a broadcast. So if I put this guy on TV and I say, this guy's a young gang member and he's told me all about a murder that his friend did, nobody can force me to check that out. You know, that I've got complete immunity from being forced to reveal his name or anything. And in this case, you're getting about £70,000 an episode. So if you just get a kid and put a hanky over his face, you know, it makes an enormous amount of financial sense. But the danger is that you end up with this situation, which is where these misleading programs give people like Boris Johnson, there's Lily Allen, they're having a chat about criminology. So you end up with this rather absurd situation of celebrity focus, and it seeps into the real issues. You know, you have people who are basically celebrities getting involved in policy and being asked to commission reports. And I don't think they always realize that they're only being asked to do it because they're a celebrity. That's the terrifying thing. So the problem is that you end up also with these awful stereotypes. Now, this is what people think of when they think of gun crime in London. And that's very deliberate. They think of a hooded youth on a council estate with a pistol. But actually, they don't think about people like this guy, who bought a gun in St. James in a posh shop, took it back to Chelsea, and shot his neighbours from the kitchen window. Right? You'll never see that. Ross Kemp didn't turn up to have a chat with him. So the greatest problem with it all, though, is that it erodes people's trust in their society, in their community. So the actual crime rate has been falling many years on the trot. That's the light blue line. And the dark blue line is the percentage of people that think that crime is rising as a whole. And that's actually held steady and actually going up slightly. So you've got this terrible terrible misinformation that's being put out there just in order to generate ratings, which is, I don't know why people aren't as upset about this as I am. But anyway, so it's not just in crime that you get these kind of iffy facts. You also have this problem with science documentaries. Now, does anybody know who that is? Yeah, Jacob Bronowski, right? So now he would never have stood for any of this, I have to say. But unfortunately, not all science documentaries reach this standard. You'll see a lot of slightly dodgy things coming about. Now, when you watch a kind of typical ratings-grabbing science documentary, they'll have a pretty standard introduction that tries to present whatever's being examined in the program as a major breakthrough, right? It'll use the phrase, you know, unproven until now. It's designed to trick you into thinking that you're watching something really revolutionary instead of the same old, you know, rehashed bollocks. And this series absolutely sums this up. This is really quite shocking. This is a BBC and Open University, which is a terrifying thing, a film called Alternative Medicine, The Evidence. That's Kathy Sykes who presented it. And the program's most controversial scene featured is here, which is still from the broadcast. And this is a Chinese cardiac patient who's about to be given open heart surgery. Now, if you listen to the voiceover, they've said that they were being given acupuncture as a painkiller, replacing the general anesthetic with acupuncture. Now, what they didn't say is anything about a local anesthetic, which is she had extra local anesthetic instead, and essentially this guy was just sitting there not really doing anything of value. But the impression was very carefully edited, and the voiceover was very carefully written that you couldn't necessarily accuse them directly of misleading, although many people did, but also at the same time, you were left with this impression that that's what you'd seen. Now, the program generated a whole slew of headlines. It was the second most watched program that week on BBC Two. All of the paper reviewers thought that they had seen somebody receive acupuncture as pain control for an operation and nothing else. So that the deliberately misleading policy actually worked in that case. But the problem is that, you know, that not all journalists were taken in. There were some other examples of people who stood up to it. But the problem is that most people, I think, in TV, particularly in the media, their assumption is about the viewers that you're frightened of science, you know, that you see it as uncaring or arrogant, that you see these people, their mouths are concealed. It's actually slightly reminiscent of those people talking to Ross Kemp in the alleyway. But it's threatening. When someone's face is concealed and so on, it's actually quite threatening. And people find medicine scary, and they find science scary, and they see it as cold and unfeeling, and it's not human. And so if you get a chance to kind of slag it off or say, like, well, you know, these guys didn't know any better. You know, this is an acupuncturist who was able to overcome years of Western science. And it's also sufficiently... Oh, does that mean we need to do the thing again? Yeah. It's all right. This is fine. We can fill. I think it's... We have to do it? Get the ladder? Okay. Well, yeah, I can carry on talking. They're mainly abstract images. But essentially, the point is that people, you know, the assumption of producers is that you're scared of science. And so if you can have somebody like this who presents a sort of ancient tradition that's seen as more feeling and more natural and so on, even though acupuncture probably isn't any of those things, it's a very, very satisfying thing to see. And of course, the producers often share those prejudices of the audience, which is why they're successful producers. So not all journalists were taken in by it. The system did work to a degree. Simon Singh, the science journalist, who some of you may know, complained to the BBC. And the BBC Trust did accept that the voiceover was misleading and inaccurate. And they upheld the complaint. But this took an enormous amount of work. And for something that was co-produced with the Open University to be judged by the BBC Trust to be misleading and inaccurate, things have come to a pretty pass. And I think the key message to understand is that these misleading techniques are a very long way from the GMTV sofa, where you'd kind of expect that kind of thing to go on. Okay, so the other example I want to talk about is Panorama, right? So they had to make a similar climb down to the Alternative Medicine the Evidence Programme after they made a documentary about how Wi-Fi signals cause illness, for which there's no evidence, right, as I'm sure you know. So the main expert was this guy called Alistair Phillips, who runs a website that sells radiation-blocking paint at £40 a litre. And he also sells this thing here, which looks like a beekeeping hat, but it's made of... it's a sort of metal beekeeping hat, which is effectively a kind of Faraday cage that you can wear out and about in case you have to walk past a building that has Wi-Fi signals, right? And this was the subject of a one-hour Panorama documentary with nobody on the other side saying this is obviously bollocks. So the programme featured a lot of interviews of teachers who were the first people to raise this problem. And they all said that after a long school day doing a stressful job surrounded by noisy and boisterous kids, right, they found they frequently suffered from symptoms like headaches, muscle tension, right, tiredness. Whereas on the weekend, they felt much better. And so, of course, the conclusion is that it was the Wi-Fi signal at the school that was causing the problem. So, and it's got a name. It's called electromagnetic hypersensitivity. And what they didn't discuss in the program is that nobody who claims to be able to suffer all these terrible symptoms can reliably identify whether they're being exposed to Wi-Fi or not. You know, you just turn their back, say, have I switched it on or not yet? And they can't tell you. So it's obviously a made-up thing. But it shows you that this film got all the way through the production stage and nobody actually said, maybe this is all just nonsense. Maybe this guy sending the beekeeping hat isn't on the level. Who'd have thought? Right. So there we are. I think that the problem in this case is I imagine not everybody involved in the making that film was being dishonest. I think there's a real attraction among TV people for the kind of maverick character, right? The Cassandra, you know? And this guy's a perfect example of it. That's Andrew Wakefield there, who was the inventor of the MMR jab hoax that somehow caused autism, which it doesn't. And, he was the one guy that knew the truth. And that's such an appealing story that there's this one guy who's figured it out. But of course, what they don't realize is that for every one guy who really has figured it out, there's 100 cranks who are just in it for publicity purposes. And I think Wakefield probably falls into that category. So one of the things is, I've got some personal experience of this. The types of errors in dumbing down, they're there from the very time the program is commissioned. And the key thing I wanted to say is, if you look at these films and you see who the directors are, they're often people who've had to fight quite hard to get reasonable content out there. I was at a funding meeting for a science broadcasting event, and somebody was pitching a documentary that would look at a collaboration between a British hospital and one in Zambia who were collaborating on the treatment of HIV. And the panel said, well, could you get somebody from Holby City to present it because it would make it more relatable? So you're talking about stripping away a huge amount of time to introduce someone who's played a doctor on TV but isn't a doctor, right, to present a documentary. So the other thing that happened on that was on the same occasion was somebody brought along a proposal about fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging research, about looking at the brain. And they're saying, well, you can expose people to different stimuli when they're in the machine and see what lights up. And they went through a few options. And one said, well, I could see us funding this film. Maybe you could put Michael Barrymore in it. And see which parts of his brain light up when you ask him about that guy that died in a swimming pool. And that was I was there. That happened. I was there. So that's really quite unpleasant. I feel bad. I didn't want to look at him. Anyway, now I want to talk about a film which I think is a really, really good example of this, which is concerning this guy, Derek Ogilvie. Does anybody know who that is? He's a Scotsman. He's a very interesting character. He was part of a documentary series called Extraordinary People, which I don't know if people have seen. It's a show on Channel 5 where they take people with an unusual medical complaint, generally. It's generally got some kind of disfigurement or obvious symptoms, people with dwarfism or Tourette's or some kind of thing that you can look at and find interesting. So the idea is it's designed to kind of let you have a gawp at somebody, but with just enough interviews to kind of try and pretend that it's a human interest film. Indeed. It's you know, it's been well satirized. But I think this example of it is really interesting, that the criticism of that show has been these people probably, you know, don't benefit from being on the program. And often they find people in the States and pay them to be on the program. Now, in the States, you know, a lot of people don't have free medical care or aren't covered by insurance. So if you have some sort of troubling disability, the only way you can get the money to pay for your treatment is often to get these guys to come in your house. So they may well want to do it in that sense, but I don't think it's a very pleasant thing to be involved in. But the episode that features Derek Ogilvy is particularly interesting because he rather stands out. This is the normal thing they have, people with something visibly wrong with them. But he seems to be, you know, quite a normal looking guy. He's not got a disease. And what's extraordinary about him, to fit in extraordinary people, is that he claims he can read the minds of small children, that he can, but only when the parents are there and only children who are too young to talk, so they can't contradict what he's saying. If you look him up on YouTube, he's called Derek Ogilvy. It's astonishing. He just sits there and says things like, "I'm hungry." And they go, "That's amazing. Our child is hungry. How did you know that?" Or whatever it is. It's like the least effective party trick, but he's made a kind of career out of this. So he managed to talk to the producer and said, "Look, I'm an extraordinary person. I've got some unusual medical problem." So he presents himself as he's a real thing. And the producers went along with it, and they decided to film as part of this series. So they're presenting him as a guy with a genuine interest. He's there with the guy with Tourette's, or the guy that was in a coma for 10 years and woke up, and what that's like. And they're presenting him, it's absolutely real. He's telepathic for babies, which is really quite frightening. So was this a case of deliberately misleading the audience, or again, a bit like the alternative medicine where they kind of knew it wasn't true but went along with it anyway because it sounded better? Well, actually, you can tell that, right? Because the film followed him. Oh, my goodness. real good. So the film basically followed him as he went to Florida for the $1 million prize, which is available to the first person who can prove telepathy or anything like that, right? There's a $1 million prize from the magician James Randi. So the film was going to follow him on his way to Florida as he sat the test. And there's a rather exciting picture of him being strapped onto an EEG while he's, you know, being looked at by them. And what they did is they got a small child to hold a series of toys. And then they asked Derek, you know, what toy is the child holding? So they tried to use that as a way of doing it. So basically, he sat there performing this test. He was examined by a psychologist who said, "I think this guy does have a medical problem, but, you know, he's deluded, or he's a con man, or he's a pathological liar." And the film kind of followed him. He went through the test. He had this very basic test. There he is talking to somebody who's having a bit of a poke around his brain. And the question was, would he be successful in the test? The answer is nope. And he had a little cry about it. And what happened was, now, obviously I've slightly prejudiced what I was saying there, but I don't think anybody watching who's halfway sensible would have expected anything other than humiliating failure. He sat there. This is obviously something that he can't really do. He believes it, I think, to some degree. But the thing that's really terrifying about this is that the producers did think he was going to pass. And when he didn't prove that he's the first man to be scientifically validated as a genuine telepath, they pulled the program. And they wrote up the money they'd spent as a loss. Now that, to me, is absolutely astonishing, right? Now, in the end, the film was salvaged when they managed to get another scientist who turned out later not to be a scientist, but was a holistically qualified whatever, you know, who said that, there's definitely something unusual about him. And that's as conclusive as even he would be, right? And they put out the film. But I think it's absolutely amazing. There was another case. I mean, this came out about the same time as I was in a meeting with someone who had filmed a documentary in a cave that was rumored to be haunted, and the commissioner asked him if ghosts had interfered with the equipment. And not on a joke, quite serious. So there's an astonishing amount of delusion and total lack of critical thinking and a lot of people in TV. And I think that's part of what I want to talk about, which is there are kind of three main reasons why people, by a lot of these things, tend to go a bit skewy. The first is that obviously there's a ratings grab. So like with the alternative medicine and these kind of things, if a story is good enough, maybe you don't check. Maybe it's like those teenage criminals, you know, they turn up and say, "I'm a gangster." Well, if you check and they turn out not to be, you don't have a film. So ratings is kind of a reason why people get in there. The other problem is there's a lack of understanding. As the case of the Ogilvy film or a lot of those things, sometimes the commissioners don't really understand the thing they're making a film about, and they don't really know what they're doing. And so it's very hard for them to approach the topic skeptically or even have put something together that comes out with a reasonably coherent worldview. The third thing is more difficult, I think, and applies specifically to science, is there's a kind of a social signaling problem. There's a kind of hierarchy, which is where I think a lot of TV people take inspiration from journalism. They see themselves as these kind of freedom fighters, and they attack whoever's in power. They have this idea, if you're in power, you deserve to be undermined and attacked. And of course, science doesn't really work like that. You can't just sort of say, well, I'm the underdog, therefore I'm right. And that's part of the appeal of Wakefield and part of those things. So you have this kind of status positioning by TV. So you have ratings, lack of understanding, and status positioning, or TV people are greedy, stupid, and vain, which is part of the problem. So, but there's a bit more to it than that, right? Before everything else, documentary commissioners, they basically want audience engagement, right? They want you paying attention. And I think part of the problem is that audiences don't really want things to be true either, necessarily. Most of these programs, they're deliberately tweaked to give you a kind of psychological boost in some way. In the case of crime, it's about kind of convincing you that there's this danger that you need to watch out for. In the case of science documentaries, it's about making the world seem less complicated and kind of scary and telling you little morality tales. I mean, a really good example of this is sometimes you'll see falsely balanced debates in which they misrepresent the fact that there might be a consensus, which allows you to feel better. It's designed to make you feel good. You sit there and watch two scientists debate global warming, and they want you to think, well, it doesn't matter if, you know, that I'm ignorant about this, because even these scientists can't make up their mind. It's designed to make you feel better about your own ignorance. And it's the same reason that during the Arab Spring, the newscasters talked about the Facebook revolution, the Twitter revolution. Again, it's calculated to make you feel better. You sit there on your sofa feeling as if, well, maybe I'm helping spread democracy to the Middle East when I log onto my Twitter or my Facebook. You know, and that's a very specific reason why they do that, right? You'll never see anything mentioning Twitter or Facebook on any of these guys' posters, right? But it's always positioned that way. So ultimately, I think your TV will lie to you basically because you let it, which is not necessarily a very positive image to end on. But deep down, I think that's where we've ended up. And that's why these people are out here, and they're out there every night. Anyway, thanks.